What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about CoQ10, specifically what it is, who should be taking it, why you should be taking it, and all the benefits you can get from it. But first, let's do a little check-in. So what's going on with you?
So I haven't done this for a while, but I finally decided to do another extended fast. I was planning on shooting for like 3 or 4 days, but it ended up being 2.5. Ended up going to the grocery store. Once I'm fasting at the grocery store, game's over.
Recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I ended up spending about 5 times more than I expected. I went there for one item, left with a cart full of food.
Yeah.
You know, it happened. So yeah, my fast ended last night, but it ended pretty good. And I think I'm for sure in ketosis again.
Good.
I ate a little bit bad this weekend. Not as bad as I expected to. I was at a wedding and drank a little bit more than I expected. Was a bit hungover. Went for some kind of bad hangover food. But yeah, that 2.5 day fast after that, I was exercising both days. I'm sure I'm back into ketosis and everything.
Yeah, no, that's true. Fasting is such a great way to like mitigate a few bad days of eating.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's how you bounce back the fastest, in my opinion.
And what's really weird is that first day was hard. Normally, like, fasting for me has been really, really easy the last few times I've done it, but I was struggling quite a bit on Monday.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Yeah, so it's probably time I need to do it. I should be doing those at least once a month, but...
Yeah, I feel like every... Like, a little cycle I thought of in my head is every 3 months to do at least a 3-day fast, like a nice little cleanse. Thinking about, like, a cleanse, but... I don't know if I could do it now, man. Like, the way, like, my diet's going, I'm so hungry all the time.
Oh, you're not prepared for it. You are. You're doing, like, a...
24/7 fast. Yeah, that's what it feels like, yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's all that's new with me. I'm still doing the, the diet to Thanksgiving, and...
That protein-sparing modified fast?
Yeah, the protein-sparing modified fast, and it's going good.
You're looking really lean, so I think it's working.
Oh, I am lean as fuck. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But, It's coming at a price.
You're hitting that wall now?
Yeah. So I have officially 2 weeks to go, like starting today. Yeah, I think it's 2 weeks or 15 days specifically until Thanksgiving. And like last week I talked about hitting that wall while training, you know, and that sucked. But I made a few adjustments this last week and I didn't really hit that wall. But I did really notice my a strength decrease.
Okay.
It was... Oh, it was such a trip, and it sucked. It really sucked. I was doing shoulders. Now, on my shoulders days, I do chest first, then shoulders, then triceps, right? So, mind you, I'm already kind of depleted when I'm just starting shoulders. So, I was starting my shoulders off with standing military press dumbbells, supersetted with side laterals, supersetted with shrugs. So, pretty much like a monster set,
yeah.
Right? And... This was like maybe my third set. I was going to do 4 sets. So it was like my third heaviest one. I had 70-pound dumbbells. Now, this is standing. So it's a little different when sitting. When you're sitting, you can do heavier dumbbell presses.
You're just better balanced. I feel like you could cheat a little bit more.
You can. You can kick it up. Yeah. All that stuff, right? So I had 70-pound dumbbells. And I was planning to do... Now, I knew if they did feel heavy, but it wasn't supposed to be like a fucking max out set. It wasn't supposed to be, right? And I cleaned them up and I got like, you know, kind of a quarter, three quarters of the way. And I was like... Oh, and I had to really like throw my back into it. I got him up here, got that first rep up, and I was like, that felt like I just pressed like my max out press.
Felt like a PR.
It felt like a PR. It really did. It felt like a personal record, like my best effort. And I was like, oh shit, I got 3 reps with it. And I was like, oh, I'm done. My shoulders are done. I was like, man, like that was the first time I noticed my like a real big drop in strength.
Do you think it's a drop in strength or do you think it's a drop in muscular endurance? Or combo?
I've for sure a combo at least, but it felt like a drop in strength because I was able to grind through the rest of the workout and be okay. Like as far as like, well, it was only triceps and then on the bike, I was fine. But yeah, the first time where those, I really felt like, damn, I'm not that strong right now. You know what I mean? And it's weird to train all the time. Like obviously I'm training all the time now, but I'm not really that strong right now.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. You know what I mean? Like I'm probably at my weakest right now. I weigh as much as like a baby bird. You know what I mean? Like it's just not, it's not really happening for me right now, but whatever.
Yes. So that could be just like, you're just fatiguing your muscles and they just don't have enough reserves because you're just depleted everywhere.
Constantly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm definitely depleted. Yeah. Yeah. I took a picture this morning, like put it on Instagram right when I woke up at like 4 a.m. And I guess like, you know, I normally when you post pictures online, they're like the best pictures. You know what I mean? Like you're looking jacked and cut. You're like super pumped, you know? But I was like, let me post a picture where I'm like depleted. So I took one right when I woke up and I looked like I got straight out of a like concentration camp. And I just put like depleted, like, you know what I mean? Because I was, you know what I mean? So
That reminds me, I think it was junior year high school history. Mm-hmm. Our teacher used to call me a concentration camp or survivor or something.
Oh, really?
Because I was cutting so much weight for wrestling. Yeah. That I just looked super depleted. I always had like a buzz head too, so that didn't help. Mm-hmm. And just like super pale, like bags under my eyes, because I've just like ran 5 miles before I had class.
Yeah, yeah.
Just working out all the time. Yeah, I don't know why that just popped in my head.
That reminded me. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that class sucked. Yeah, it did.
I think I did maybe 40% of the work in that class because I fell so far behind during the season.
Yeah.
I think I still got to be in the class.
Yeah, I remember you did good and you didn't do anything. I remember. Yeah.
Well, I showed up.
Yeah, I guess that's all you have to do in high school, huh?
I showed up and I had excuses for everything just because, like, the wrestling team was really good and mm-hmm. it just took so much time. So she's just like, just turn something in.
And you were a good kid. It's not like you were a bad kid. Yeah. So that's true.
Oh, of course. I was quiet because I was sleeping in class.
Tired of shit.
From not eating and working my ass off.
Yeah, that's true. So do we want to get into CoQ10?
Yeah, I think that's a nice little transition.
Yeah, this stems, yeah, I guess so, from just energy levels. I finished that mitochondria book. It was maybe like 2 weeks ago. I'm rereading it again. I've actually just finished it again, so I finished it twice. But what I really pulled from it was CoQ10 is such a vital nutrient that I think can help so many people that it kind of inspired us to do a whole podcast on it. So that's kind of the genesis of it.
Yeah, I'm glad we decided to do one on this topic because I thought I knew a lot more about it than I actually did. I didn't realize how many uses it actually has.
For sure.
So do you want to just get started? Like, what is CoQ10?
Yeah, so CoQ10, God, it's not technically a vitamin because vitamin is something our body can't make itself, but it is an essential component in pretty much every cell in our body. Anything that has a mitochondria has CoQ10 in it, so pretty much everything besides red blood cells. And it's involved in specifically the electron transport chain, which is just how our body produces ATP. But it also helps mainly as an antioxidant, so it prevents oxidative damage in our body.
And the real name for CoQ10 is coenzyme Q10, but you're probably never going to hear that, so just CoQ10 is the layman's term for it.
Yeah. And there is two forms of it you'll find. There's one, ubiquinone and ubiquinol. So ubiquinone is the oxidized version of CoQ10. Ubiquinol is the reduced version of CoQ10. So ubiquinol is really the heavy hitter. So that's the one doing a lot of the work. So I guess to really kind of break down what oxidative damage is, it kind of stems from free radicals. So what free radicals will do is they'll steal electrons from cells around the body, because free radicals aren't very stable, they're very unstable, so they go around kind of just jacking electrons from various molecules and cells around them, and that damages them. So it'll damage whatever lipids, proteins, any sort of cell in your body. And ubiquinol is capable of donating an electron to these free radicals, which neutralizes them, makes them happy, it kind of reverts them back to a more stable form so they stop doing that damage. And so that's how it protects our body from oxidative damage.
Yeah, so that's basically a really in-depth way of looking at it. So it reduces oxidative damage. Most of us would just see that as like it's going to decrease inflammation throughout the body and just decrease a lot of damage that goes on with us breaking down fuel.
Yes.
I mean, we see this with everyday lives. When we burn fossil fuels, there's a lot of harmful byproducts. When we're burning glucose or ketones in the body, there's some harmful byproducts. It's just a way of life. There's just no way around it.
Yeah, exactly. No system is 100% efficient. So, I mean, I guess just to break it down as like basic as possible, if you wonder why we need to breathe, why we need to eat, it's because our body needs to produce ATP for energy. You can think of ATP as like our internal AA battery. So what our body uses for any sort of chemical process that requires energy, it uses ATP. So a healthy cell will have a continuous high amount of ATP present. So we eat, and that eventually through a ton of chemical reactions yields electrons, and we breathe, and that obviously yields O2, and those two things are used in our mitochondria to produce ATP. So that's why we have to just breathe and eat to survive.
Yeah, so like you said, every cell with a mitochondria, which is damn near every cell in the body.
Yeah, except like red blood cells. That's damn near the only thing.
Yeah. So CoQ10 affects everything. So specifically in the body, it's going to be mostly in your heart, kidney, liver, lungs, just your organs that are working 24/7. If they stop working, you die. So those are the organs that are really, really going to be...
like metabolically active organs, for sure.
And then where you're going to feel it is going to be in your muscles. If you are deficient in CoQ10, you'll feel like muscle pain. You'll be extremely sore after a workout, even though all you did was just you walked to the fridge. Your legs are sore the next day. Or you walked up a couple flights of stairs, even though you're used to doing that on a normal basis. Now you can't get up and walk the next day. So if you're feeling that type of muscle pain, imagine what's going on like inside your heart or inside your kidneys. You know, an organ that's using way more energy and you're not even feeling it. Like, I don't know how my heart feels. Like, if my heart's in pain, I'm not going to feel heart pain. It's going to be referred pain, and I'm going to feel it somewhere else throughout the body, normally in the left arm, but your organs can just trigger random spots. Because we're just not used to feeling pain in our organs.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's such a good point. Like, our hearts are so important as far as, you know, being metabolically active, and they have to pump 24/7, 365. So if they do have a low energy state where they're not really adequately supplied with ATP, they have mechanisms to compensate. And that's why we really won't notice any of these, you know, heart failures or something like hypoxia, low blood oxygen, ischemia, just low oxygen or low blood flow. We won't notice that right away because our body will compensate. Because once that damage gets too bad, that's when you just wake up and you die. You know what I mean? That's it. There's no coming back.
Yeah. So who should be taking CoQ10?
Personally, I think anybody, man. I mean, this thing is so important. But after the age of 35, our body does start producing less CoQ10. And it's so important in our body. So I think if you're over 35, you definitely should think about supplementing with it. Even if you don't have any symptoms, it's not going to hurt you. But if you have heart failure, hypertension, diabetes, and maybe even skin issues, like it can help with oxidative stress in your skin, people like that should probably supplement with CoQ10. Don't you think?
Oh, definitely. So like we mentioned earlier, it's very essential for proper mitochondrial health. So where you're really going to notice that is with cancer patients. Like we talked about in an earlier podcast, cancer is a metabolic disease that happens inside your mitochondria. So if you don't want to get cancer or you're in some sort of treatment for cancer, proper mitochondrial health is very, very important for this. So you want to make sure you have CoQ10 as part of your diet. And like you kind of briefed upon earlier, just like skin health, pretty much any sort of organ needs proper detoxification. So CoQ10 is a very potent antioxidant.
It is, yeah.
So, yeah, that'll help clear up your skin. If you're a male and you have, like, low sperm count, sperm are easily affected by oxidative stress. So this is a great way to, you know, if you're trying to have some babies. Diabetics, that's another metabolic disease that it happens in the mitochondria. The most important one that I want to talk about is people on a statin. So people with, unfortunately, if you get high cholesterol, you're all of a sudden a red flag for having heart disease, or if you've actually had a heart attack in the past, more likely than not, you're going to be on a statin drug.
God, I hate statins, man. I mean, I think statins are just criminal. You know, there's a lot of people making a lot of money off statins, but one of the biggest reasons why statins are just shit is the fact that they reduce your body's ability to produce CoQ10. So, I mean, specifically how statins work, they block our body's enzyme, which is HMG-CoA reductase. So it's how our body makes cholesterol. So 80% of the cholesterol in our body synthesizes itself. Because cholesterol is a pretty big fat-soluble molecule, so we just can't absorb it that well from the food we eat. So statins work by preventing our body from synthesizing it. But in the process, it prevents our body from synthesizing CoQ10. And it just doesn't make sense. Like, it's such a vital nutrient for a heart health, yet we're giving this drug to supposedly prevent heart disease But in the process, we're just making you more susceptible for heart disease.
So we're giving you a drug that blocks your ability to make CoQ10. And what CoQ10 does is it decreases inflammation, and it also is very important in helping out your body create energy. The most important organ in our body that needs energy is your heart.
Yes.
So a statin drug is blocking probably the most efficient like nutrient for your heart. So if you are, unless you want to have a heart attack, then don't take CoQ10. Like, you should be taking as much CoQ10 as you possibly can. Like, anybody that's at risk of having a heart attack, or if you're just afraid of having one in the future, CoQ10 is your new best friend.
It's a way to go. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And actually, this reminds me, I want to read this little passage from this book, because it kind of touches on the, just the how stupid this shit is. Like, once you kind of know what's going on with statins. So let me read, just a real short paragraph.
What's the book?
The book is Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine: The Key to Understanding Disease, Chronic Illness, Aging, and Life Itself. So
it's a bit of a mouthful.
It is a bit of a mouthful, but it is an awesome book, and I definitely recommend it. And it's something, actually, like, if you read the salt book, the guy, the author of the salt book, thinks everything's about salt. If you read the cholesterol book, the cholesterol guy thinks everything's about cholesterol, you know, vice versa.
Yeah.
But this book really feels like it did get to such, like, the bottom, like, the basement. Like, our mitochondria are so important in everything that when they go to shit, that's when everything goes to shit. So it's really focused on the mitochondria. It just made perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I didn't spend that much time learning about mitochondria in school. But everything I'm learning about everything now.
How important they are.
Yeah, cancer, heart disease, diabetes.
Yes.
Telomeres is like one of the best ways to look at your longevity. That's mitochondria.
Yeah.
Like, everything's just looking at mitochondrial health.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, they just tell you, oh, it's a powerhouse of the cell, and they leave it. That's it. Like, okay, on to the next. It's like, no, there should be a whole course just on mitochondria. It really should be.
Well, once you stop producing energy, you die.
You're dead. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little bit more important than just producing energy.
It's so important. But yeah, so this quote just kind of goes into the use of statins. So it just starts off with, this data is where I get a little puzzled. CoQ10 is essential for heart muscle function. We know this. The heart requires vast amounts of energy to repetitively contract and relax and pump blood 24 hours a day for the duration of a life. It seems illogical to prescribe a drug that, while effective in lowering cholesterol, can actually promote dysfunction in the heart muscle and set up for a future cardiovascular disease. It's also important to remember that CoQ10 is an important antioxidant that prevents the oxidation of LDL cholesterol, predominantly as ubiquinol when found in the blood. If CoQ10 is one of the primary antioxidants that keeps LDL from oxidation, and statins deplete CoQ10 levels, again, you can see the paradox in prescribing statins. That just shows that on every level, statin prescriptions are a hoax. Like, it's just a scam.
The best explanation I've heard of, like, why statins can be effective is that they lower inflammation, and that's where you get most of the benefits from. Because statin drugs aren't the first drugs to lower cholesterol. There's been other drugs in the past, they just haven't been popularized. But there's a million ways to lower inflammation.
Yes, without compromising all these other systems.
Yeah, without depleting your body of a very, very essential
potent antioxidant. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think, yeah, there's, like, toll receptors that line our gut. So when things, like, when our gut becomes permeable to products, like, it's called leaky gut, these toll receptors kind of go off. They say, hey, things are in us that are not supposed to be in us, and it kind of starts inflammation. So, which is a good thing. Like, when something's in us that's not supposed to be in us, those receptors are there for a reason. But statins work on those cells, those toll receptors, and they say, hey, chill out. We're fucked. We know we're fucked. Stop doing inflammation. You know what I mean? So even the way they work is the result okay, but the way they go about it is just complete crap.
So it's like the smoke detector going off, and like the statin's like, hey, don't worry. It's not a fire. I'm just cooking, even though it really is a fire.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, shit really is bad here, but like, no, it's been bad for the last 20 years. We're going to die soon. Leave us alone. You know? Yeah.
Damn, that's just sad.
It is, man. So if you're on a statin, please take CoQ10.
Who was the author of that book? Just want to make sure we're giving proper credit out here.
Yeah, we should. Let me pull it up. It's Lee No. LeeKnow.
It's a pretty good name if you're going to be writing books.
Yeah, Lee knows his shit. Let me tell you.
All right. So another segment of the population that could should look into taking CoQ10 is those looking for an athletic performance boost. There's not a lot of information out there on this, but just think of it logically. If CoQ10 is great for your mitochondria produce energy. People who exercise a lot have a very high demand for energy. So CoQ10 should be a very important product to help you have increased energy. A lot of things that help sick people get better can help healthy people turn into like super athletes.
Yeah.
It's not that much like different. No. What makes somebody stronger is going to make that different person stronger as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. It's just this supplement isn't really marketed towards, say, young people or even just anybody looking for an athletic edge. It's marketed towards people who are already compromised because it can help you so much. So that's why you really don't hear about it in the athletic world.
And it is a bit of a kind of a costly supplement.
It's not that cheap. Yeah, yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. Like the cheapest one you'll find maybe for a month's supply is around like $30 or $40. So it's not that cheap.
Yeah, I buy it. I actually give it to my dog, and it's 100 pills for $40.
Yeah, how many pills do you give her?
She's little, so pill a day.
A pill a day. So yeah, so like 3 months almost. Yeah. Yeah. That's not that bad, actually. That's good for a dog. Your dog's getting primetime shit.
Oh, and she eats grass-fed, beef heart all the time, mm-hmm. Kidney, liver. She eats good. She eats better good. Than I do.
Yeah.
So when should we be taking CoQ10? Like how often?
Every day. Yeah. Like I said earlier, after the age about 35, our body starts producing less and less CoQ10. And if we're compromised, diabetic, heart disease, hypertension, anything like that, then we definitely need more CoQ10. And our body really doesn't have a place to store a lot of CoQ10. You know, we have some in our blood as ubiquinol. But 80% of CoQ10 our body has are in our mitochondria. So we want to keep taking that supplement with it every day.
Yeah, especially if you're on a statin drug, then you should probably be taking it multiple times throughout the day and in a pretty high amount too. So if you're a healthy individual, maybe you're just 40 years old, but all your biomarkers are pretty healthy, you should be looking at like 100 to 200 milligrams, somewhere along those lines. That's a pretty small dose. But if you're compromise, like you have diabetes, or if you have heart disease, or you're on a statin, you should be looking at 200 to 500. If you're on a statin, probably close to like 1,000 a day, maybe more. I haven't really come across too many negative side effects. Most of the side effects seem to be just gastrointestinal issues. So maybe you feel nauseous, maybe some diarrhea, something along those lines. And to me, that's most likely going to be caused by something that's in the pill. And not the CoQ10 that's in the pill. It's going to be some of the fillers, maybe what the pill's coated in. Unfortunately, a lot of them are coated in some crappy oils.
Yeah, a lot of soy oil, a lot of canola oil out there. Yeah. And a lot of the early supplements of CoQ10, when this first started coming out in the market, was ubiquinone, which is the oxidized version of CoQ10. And our body really doesn't absorb that very well. So it makes sense that you'd have a stomach ache or experience some sort of GI issues. If you fill your stomach with a bunch of pills that you don't absorb, your body's obviously just going to push that through your system as quick as possible. So with the new formulations like ubiquinol, some that are water soluble, fat soluble, you know, pre-emulsified, those ones are the best ones to get. You really shouldn't experience any sort of GI issues. And if you are going to eventually take a high dose, just start small, you know, start around that 100, 200 milligrams a day, and then just work your way up until whatever symptoms you experience, you start noticing a decrease in those symptoms. And I've seen numbers as high as 3,000 milligrams a day with no adverse side effects. And specifically, those are prescribed for people with neurological issues. Because of the blood-brain barrier, it's hard to kind of get things across there. So you kind of have to flood the market just to get anything in there. So something like ALS or Parkinson's, things like that. But if you're dealing with hypertension, heart disease, hopefully anything 200 to 600 should be enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree, unless you're on a statin, and then you definitely want to be in a higher dose range.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple ways that you can take it. I would recommend taking it with food, especially as some sort of fatty meal, because CoQ10 is fat soluble. So you want some sort of fat to help you absorb it, and it'll just help your body absorb it more. Some pills are better on an empty stomach. Most other ones are going to be better with food. once it hits your stomach's not going to empty because it has one little pill in it. But if you eat a 1 pound steak, fill up your stomach, then it's going to empty a little bit faster. And you don't want food to be in your stomach. You want it to be in your intestine. That's where all the magic happens. That's where that food actually turns into you or just gets passed right along.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, something I did want to touch on a little bit was actually how CoQ10 works in the electron transport chain. And it kind of gets a little nerdy, but I think it's important. And I think I kind of geek out on this stuff. So
I'll translate for our...
You can translate a little bit. So, I mean, the electron transport chain is just so important. It's where our body gets a bulk of our ATP. Like, it's not even close. So our body has three systems that produce ATP. We have glycolysis, which I'll just use glucose as the example because it's definitely the most simplest. We can do the same thing with fatty acids, but systems change a little bit. But it starts with glycolysis that happens in the cytosol of the cell. So just think of like the middle part of a cell, the soup part of the cell, not in any sort of organelle. And that system produces 2 ATP. And then after that, we go through the TCA cycle. And again, that... the byproducts of glycolysis will run through the TCA cycle, producing another 2 ATP. So after the TCA cycle and glycolysis, we have 4 ATP total from this glucose. But once we run the high energy molecules created from the TCA cycle, we'll end up with 38 ATP per glucose. So that just shows that's a 90% jump from the glycolysis and TCA cycle to the electron transport chain. Like, the bulk of the ATP our body needs to survive. And the only reason we won evolution, like, we won. You know what I mean? We're the biggest, most complex, smartest creatures out there is because our cells have enough energy to do their thing. And that's why the electron transport chain is so important. That's where all our energy is coming from, the vast majority of it. And when cells become compromised and mitochondria become compromised, they revert back to glycolysis because they don't require mitochondria. They don't require O2. They're super inefficient. They're super sloppy. They do produce a lot of byproducts that are harmful that have to be they have to be reduced, like free radicals. So just having healthy mitochondria and supporting electron transport chain is what allows us to be us. It allows us to be human.
I mean, just think of it with like as a car. Like, there's plenty of cars that get 38 miles per gallon that are on the road. How many cars do you know that are on the road that get 2 miles per gallon? I mean, like, okay, maybe it's a super fast sports car, but I mean, outside of that, like, those cars just don't exist anymore because they're just obsolete. Yes. And that's basically what happened with us. Like, if you can create more energy, you're more likely to survive. You survived. The people that couldn't died off a long ass time ago.
Exactly. Yeah. Those cells did not win evolution. Those cells died off. It's, you know, survival of the fittest, you know, thank you, Darwin. That stuff happened. You know what I mean? So, and as far as CoQ10's role in the electron transport chain is we have high energy, like, electron shuttle molecules. They're NADH and FADH2. Those are products produced from glycolysis and TCA cycle. Those get transferred to the electron transport chain and they carry electrons. You can think of electrons as just energy molecules, what our body's going to use to create energy. So they transfer those electrons to CoQ10 in complex one of the electron transport chain. So that's the most vital component in our body is this complex one of electron transport chain. This is what's happening. This is how the whole thing gets started. And that's where CoQ10 comes into play. It accepts these electrons as ubiquinone. It gets reduced to ubiquinol from complex one to complex two. It gets FADH2 from complex two. And then it transfers those molecules to cytochrome C in complex three. Again, this is how it produces energy. So this is what it does. It just shuttles electrons from these different complexes to produce ATP. So we need it. And where CoQ10 is vital, again, complex one, complex two, complex three, we think of free radicals as coming from the outside world, right? Don't you think of free radicals as like harmful, like UV radiation?
The air that we're breathing. Yeah. Yeah, the water that we're drinking.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how we think of damage from the environment. But really, the vast amount of free radicals we produce endogenously, we produce in ourselves, and we produce them right there in complex one and complex three. That's where our body produces the most free radicals, and it's not even close. And the product and the nutrient that's in our body to prevent the buildup of those free radicals is CoQ10. That's what's there to prevent all those free radicals from going crazy. Because if we have electrons kind of bouncing in and out of the electron transport chain, not doing things they're supposed to do, they react with oxygen that's in this system to produce a free radical called superoxide. And then superoxide goes around, and like I said earlier, defining free radicals, they pretty much just jack electrons from everything around it, causing havoc. So ubiquinol is just so important, and the more I know about it, the more I want to supplement with it. I'm personally not old enough, I don't think, to supplement with it, but I just want to. I think it might be a waste of money, but I feel like it's just so important, you know?
So, yeah, just talking about how you want to supplement with it. We were just talking before we started recording about how I don't think he's a high candidate for it. Yeah. Because let's just talk about the food sources for it. Organ meats is like number one.
It is, yeah.
Surprise, surprise, beef heart is at like the top of that list.
Yeah, beef heart is the top of that list because, like we said before, the heart is such a metabolically active organ. So, therefore, it's super dense with mitochondria. And with all the mitochondria, you get CoQ10. So, I did a little bit of math, and in about a pound of beef heart, we get 50 milligrams of CoQ10, which is huge. That's the most you're going to find in any food on the planet. So, the second most is going to be sardines. So, with a gram of sardines, you're going to get about 64 micrograms of CoQ10, which is still pretty good. So, eating sardines is very healthy. I mean, in comparison, like most plants have about 1 microgram per gram of plant. So, it's not enough. It's not even close. If you think about beef heart is 113 micrograms per gram. So beef heart is just so healthy. If you want to supplement with CoQ10 naturally, if you want to, because I do, like we've talked about before, we should be able to get everything we need from our food. Because obviously didn't have GNCs 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that is how our body back in the day would replenish its CoQ10 sources, is from these organ meats. And thank God I stumbled on beef heart, because I think I'm the only dude who eats a pound of beef heart a day, you know?
Yeah, so the other food sources, so beef heart and just pretty much any type of organ meat, liver, kidney, all that stuff's going to be really good for you. Eggs is another great source, fatty fish, and certain nuts. There are other food sources that do have it. We just don't recommend them because like some of them are crap, like soybean oil and canola oil, where to me is you're probably getting more harmful stuff out of it than you are the benefits.
Yes.
Or maybe at best, like that potent antioxidant is just dealing with all the increased inflammation and free radicals.
Of the food itself.
Yeah, so it's like,
Not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really not. Yeah, I hate that. I didn't, when looking up this episode, like seeing them recommend soy for the CoQ10, I'm like, man, you don't know.
I was really surprised as the site that I looked up quite a few articles on that recommended soybean and canola oil. If I type in soybean canola oil, there's going to be probably like 30 articles just saying how bad it is. So I'm like, why are you recommending it over here?
Yeah.
Like,
damn. Makes no sense.
Yeah.
I know.
There was one thing that we kind of brushed over real quickly. I don't think we really touched upon it as much as you wanted to. Mm-hmm. There's one other population that should be taking CoQ10. Mm-hmm. What was that drug?
Oh, warfarin?
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, CoQ10's great. 99% of people can take it, but if you are on a drug, it's a blood thinner called warfarin, you might want to be a little hesitant as far as taking CoQ10. Because what warfarin does is it kind of messes with vitamin K. So it's a vitamin K antagonist. So it blocks vitamin K's ability to activate blood clotting factors. Because hence it's a blood thinner, so it prevents blood clotting. And CoQ10 and vitamin K have a very similar chemical structure. So if you take CoQ10, you might interfere with warfarin's, you know, actions. So, you know, speak with your physician and maybe see if you can get on a different blood thinner. You know, there are different ones out there. I would argue better ones out there. So do that. I mean, do you even think if they talk to their physician, they'd even know that?
Probably not, because normally you just look at warfarin lowers blood pressure, and that's all it does.
It's a blood thinner,
It doesn't do anything else.
Yeah.
And statins, they affect cholesterol, and that's all they do.
Yeah, not that this whole thing's connected.
Yeah, they don't look at... Yeah, everything in our body's connected. You can't just affect one thing without affecting a million other things.
I know. So just be aware of that. You know, it's definitely... I think that's the only, like, red flag that came up with CoQ10 is people on that drug. So be aware.
Yeah, and what seems like really kind of like counterintuitive with that is people that are on warfarin are heart patients, and the people that need to be taking CoQ10 the most are heart patients.
Yes.
So I would think instead of not taking the CoQ10, you should figure out a way around the warfarin.
Yes, there are definitely other blood thinners out there. Just I would switch to a different one. Yeah. And I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about hypertension. Like, it can reduce blood pressure as well. Specifically, again, just his role as a very potent antioxidant. Our body has it produces nitric oxide, and it's just one of our body's ways to relax blood vessels. So if we need to kind of dilate things, it can produce nitric oxide. But one of the byproducts of that system is something called peroxynitrite, and that is just a free radical. It goes around kind of wrecking shop. So ubiquinol goes around and neutralizes that peroxynitrate. So your body can have the benefits of the nitric oxide, you know, releasing that pressure, lowering blood pressure, but not deal with the negative side effects of the peroxynitrate free radicals. So once again, it's just whatever it is, heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, CoQ10 is going to help.
So nitric oxide, that's the most popular pre-workout supplement.
Oh yeah, NO2, you ever heard of that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I don't know how many brands there are that make the same thing now, but NO2 was the main one when
we were coming up. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
it was. So should those people be taking CoQ10, that supplement with nitric oxide?
Yeah, for sure. So your body, again, just the metabolism of that NO2, you're going to be producing peroxynitrite free radicals, and CoQ10 is used to neutralize those. So you're going to be in your 20s, and this goes into kind of performance as well. So it could be part of like a stack, is to get the benefits of the NO2 supplementation, but use CoQ10 to mop up the negative results of that.
Okay. We'll talk about NO2 on a different podcast. We're going to do a little bit of a series on all these different supplements. I just wanted to talk about that right now since it kind of came up.
Yeah, that'll be a good topic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so
we hit all the talking points?
Yeah, who should take it, why, how to take it. I think we kind of got through everything. Hopefully this has been a lot of information, a lot of gainer information that's going to convince you to take CoQ10. Myself, I'm a 30-year-old young male that I eat tons of eggs, organ meats, I eat fish. I eat pretty much most of the main food sources, so I'm not really too worried about it as of yet, but maybe in the near future I should be. Or I might be looking at it as a performance booster.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely going to start taking it. I mean, I'm not going to stop eating heart anytime soon. It's dirt cheap, and I've actually grown to like the taste. So I'm eating heart all the time. But
yeah, you were super happy. Like when I came in, you were eating some beef heart, and you were just telling me how delicious it is.
But honestly, I'm so damn hungry all the time. But it is so good. I love it. Yeah. But as I get older, I'm definitely going to supplement with it. And I put my parents on it. So I've already got some for my parents. They're taking it now. So, you know, I got my parents on a little cocktail, so hopefully they age like fine wine, you know, we'll see.
Well, yeah, there's tons of benefits, and I haven't really seen anything that would prevent me from taking it other than it might give you some diarrhea, and that's more likely caused by one of the fillers that's going to be in the pill.
Yeah, and the old bad form, if you're going to, again, buy ubiquinone, you want to buy ubiquinol. So that's the reduced form of that. So get that version, that one's better absorbed.
All right, so I think that pretty much wraps it up on CoQ10.
Yeah. Do we have a tip of the week?
Yeah, so the tip of the week is heat exposure. Most likely just use heat exposure post-workout. So most likely you're going to have a sauna at a gym, hopefully. Like a lot of newer gyms have saunas. They might also have a steam room. I personally stay out of steam rooms. There's a couple like really bad things that can come along with the steam room. It's basically a perfect breeding ground for fungus and bacteria.
They love a bunch of dudes in there, nice and sweaty. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it stays wet all the time. And it's not hot enough to kill all the bacteria either. So like if that was 180 degrees in there, really wouldn't be a problem. But 100 degrees, like that 100% humidity, is just perfect breeding ground for fungus, bacteria. And then just all the other toxins that are in the water, now you're turning it into steam. So you're turning that water into air, and now you're just breathing in that air. There are so many things wrong with a steam room. Unless you're going to a high-end spot that is making sure they're using filtered water and they're cleaning that thing all the time, but hopefully not with like bleach or something that's going to kill you too.
Yeah.
So personally, just stay out of steam rooms. It's just easier that way, and just go for the sauna. So there's a lot of like benefits that go along with sauna. One of them is not losing weight. Everybody thinks you're going to lose weight by going to the sauna. Yes, you might walk in there at 150 pounds, walk out at 147 pounds. But you know what's going to happen? You're going to drink a couple of glasses of water, go back to 150 pounds, and there's no net loss. You're not really losing weight from going in the sauna. In fact, your body's going to adjust to that heat exposure by storing more water throughout the body, mostly in the form of blood plasma. That's just water in your blood, for, you know, making it a little bit simpler. So that increased blood plasma is very good for people that are either endurance athletes or people that just sweat all the time. That way you can sweat more without really losing any parts of your blood or any other nutrients that are essential for you. So that's just why our body's just adapting to be a better sweater. So you want to increase blood plasma for endurance athletes. That way you can sweat more before that dehydration really kicks in and really starts to hinder your endurance and your performance. That's not really going to happen to a power lifter that's doing one set, you know.
And he's not doing it long enough.
You're not losing enough water in that 30 seconds for it to really impact you. Yeah. But if you're playing a game of basketball, you're sweating for 3 straight hours. Yeah, that increased blood plasma is definitely going to play an effect.
Yeah.
I mean, it even happened to LeBron James a few years ago when he cramped up during the finals. The best athlete that any of us have ever seen has cramped up before due to dehydration.
Yeah.
So, like, it can happen to anybody.
It can.
Another really good benefit to heat exposure is it increases growth hormone. So increased growth hormone is great if you're trying to build muscle, which is why most people go to the gym. But it's also great at helping you with recovery, because then it's going to cut back on how much muscle you're really catabolizing while you're working out as well. So that's just a great way to increase your BMR, which will actually help you lose weight. So sitting in a sauna can indirectly help you lose weight, but it's not going to directly help you lose weight. Another benefit of it is it can help you detoxify the body, but it will only help you detox the body if you can get yourself into a parasympathetic state.
That means relaxed.
Yes, there's the feed and breathe, or rest and digest. That's parasympathetic. Mm-hmm. Sympathetic, fight or flight.
Yeah, it's running from the tiger.
Run and kill, I guess.
Yeah, run and kill, yeah.
So while you're at the gym, while you're working out, you're in a sympathetic state. I mean, unless you're doing some yoga, meditating.
Super chill yoga, yeah.
Yeah, like maybe you might be in a parasympathetic state. So, like, your body is not going to detoxify while it's in a sympathetic state. It's got other things it's worried about. It's thinking that you need to run or you need to kill. So, you're not really worried about detoxifying. But if you can tone it down, put some relaxing music on, do some sort of meditation while you're in the sauna, now you're able to detoxify the body. You're able to excrete some heavy metals and other toxins. Sweating is a great way to get rid of a lot of just toxins in our body. And either type of sauna, infrared or dry saunas, you can use. Or honestly, you don't really need to go into a sauna to get the benefits of heat exposure. If you live in a desert like we do, just go outside for 15 minutes a day when it's 100 something degrees outside.
Yeah, when it's 110, yeah.
Yeah, like you'll get a lot of the same benefits of it. Or you can just turn the heat up in your car while you're driving home from work and just start sweating that way.
Oh, like, God. It sounds miserable.
It does sound miserable. And yeah, if you don't have anybody else in the car, I guess it's okay. It might start getting a little funky in there.
For sure.
All the benefits really come from just exposure to heat. So there's a lot of free ways to get heat exposure.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of just great benefits. And I know not a lot of people are using it or using it properly. I don't know how many stupid people I see in the sauna just going about it the wrong way.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And there's always ways to optimize things. There's always ways to get better. And doing little things like that, just optimizing your routine, is just a great, great way to improve performance and overall health.
Oh, and it doesn't take long either. I mean, like, just go in the sauna for 10 minutes after your workout, you're going to get a lot of the same benefits. You don't need to sit in there for 3 hours at a time.
Yep. No, that's great. All right, that's another episode in the books. So hope you guys enjoyed it. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. And you can find us on any social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at tntwellnessandnutrition. So reach out.
Yeah, look for our logo. It's the flexing bicep and the blue heart. There's a lot of other TNT wellnesses out there. We're the best, so make sure you're finding the right one.
Yeah.
I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.